It's about a quality of life, having peace, having joy.
His love for us, you know, west and right. I mean,
west and right.
North and south. You know,
yeah. We kind of lose track of her. In fact, she's not mentioned after.
The Catholics didn't.
That's great. I like that.
What he's saving you from is that mindset of putting yourself on the throne of your heart. I know I don't need to be on the throne of my life. I'm very well aware of what I'm capable of, and I know better than to put me.
I know how I can mess up.
Yeah, and I certainly know he should be the one calling the shots. Day to day, hour to hour, it's real easy to forget that. But when you do remember it, you do get that peace of understanding that I don't have to have the answers right now. I don't have to know why he's doing this, and I don't even have to like it. I'm still trusting him. Right. That trusting God.
That's the other 167.
It is. Yeah.
Trusting God takes the fear out of life.
That's a good enough line. I might let you put that on your shirt instead of 90% of my sins.
I like that.
Give me your shirt back.
I do like that part. This abundant life isn't a rare thing. CBHWs.
Put it on.
What you got? Nice. Is it our faces?
It
oh,
is.
My Lord.
Isn't that great?
Oh, my Lord.
You bet I'm going to put this on. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have one?
That's a trip. No, no. Man. That's a
trip.
We got one for you.
Did you really?
It's a special one.
Oh, man.
This one's very special.
What do you got? Come on, man.
Very special.
Oh, boy.
I tried to write something on the back, but I...
All right, hold on now. So this is the first time you've ever seen a pop flip collar over a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Oh,
there
boy.
How's that?
Ooh, that's a nice shirt.
That is nice.
I do like that.
Yeah,
I'm gonna wear mine backwards.
There you go. I like that. Now I want to know. I want to know where his is gonna be.
Yeah.
That says 10%. 90% of his sins have been his fault. Yeah. Where's that one at?
Yeah. I'm putting that up right there, just like that. I'm gonna make sure that's on the camera.
Go. Yeah.
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 Make
sure
we.
Oh, you got yours on.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got uniforms.
Yeah, we're in uniform.
All right, dadgummit. This ain't on camera. I'm gonna get out of camera shot.
Stand off camera. I'll catch you. I'll cut it out.
All right. Mine's a little big.
You haven't been washed.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. I love it.
Well, then shout out to our sponsor, Renee.
Yes.
For putting together our first 167 gear.
You were in contact with us.
I was, but see, I don't know if you knew this. I wasn't supposed to know about it. She texted me and asked me for the picture. And she said I couldn't.
Well, you want another one, huh?
No, I'm just saying.
You want another present?
You use those at Christmas time, man. I always save your boxes.
Yeah, she does save these.
My grandma taught me that. Sorry to interrupt.
No, Renee texted me a week or two ago and asked me if I could get her a picture, get her the image file.
See, I got the sizes.
Okay.
I was asking.
Yeah, how did you get the sizes?
He brought it up. He asked us about our shirt. We had an episode where we talked about shirt sizes, and I didn't know why.
Ben probably wears extra large.
That's pretty funny.
That is. It was pretty
funny. What did
I say?
Yeah.
I said a large. I said a medium, probably.
You said you were between a medium and a large. And
you say you were large, extra large.
Yeah.
Closer to a medium.
That part was real smooth because he played that in real smooth.
He is smooth. There are times
but
when
he fools me. I don't think he knew that I wasn't supposed to know or something because he said something afterwards about the shirts Renee will be here next week.
Renee already, I was in the room when Renee was trying to figure out how to do them.
Yeah.
Tell him just text him.
Yeah. Well, she was texting me. She said, I need a picture of that image, but you can't ask me why. I said, okay. So I sent it. So I knew she was up to something, but I wasn't sure what. And then after we finished up last week, or whatever week it was, he said, yeah, the shirts should be here next week. I said, what shirts? Hey, what are you talking about?
Well, I thought she had told you, but it didn't matter. I got two glasses.
I knew she was up to something. Well, welcome back to the other 167. Garrett. Pastor Ben.
Turn around. You got to turn around.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had it.
He showed it earlier, yeah.
There you go.
I submit for your consideration. Yeah. That is my...
And just script it out in here.
I don't know what it is about that phrase I love so much. It's like... It fits in a lot of different context.
Well, it's a way of saying you really need to think about this.
And, it can be used in a way to say you're wrong.
Yeah. I use it all the time.
That's right.
I submit for your consideration.
Right.
And especially when you have a maybe a daughter that is pretty good at arguing. Mm. It's best just to submit it that way. I submit for your consideration. Just think about it this way. And it's just become one of my favorites, especially when I teach.
Yeah.
Because, think about it. Because oftentimes, if you never thought about it, it's a good way to think. Hey, think about this.
Now you don't even have to say it.
I just turn my back.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, Nicole, I do need to clarify for the record that if you listen to the end of the show last week, it does come across probably as if we, because you said something about Nicole and then it immediately cuts to you saying, I cut that last part out.
Okay.
Well, I want to set the record straight in case Nicole ever hears. We weren't talking about you. It wasn't
she'll
anything like
to it
that.
She didn't call me on that. Maybe she's in the middle of vacation holiday. So
there you go. Maybe she won't catch that one.
Yeah.
But Renee, she started talking about that, I guess, 6 months ago or something.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a good gift. Good.
That is.
They can see that far ahead and think about it and see.
Yeah. How's your Christmas shopping coming?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I got a real good helper.
Yeah.
Santa's got a good
help. Was it church Sunday that you brought up how many, that there were people that had their spiritual gift was shopping?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, there is. Those ladies have already gone and gotten all the, and shout out to, Katie and Leah and all those, everybody who went and did, because oftentimes we do a Salvation Angel Tree, Salvation Army Angel Tree. And what it is, you take a name off the tree and you go and buy gifts. Well, usually that's what Renee and I do. It's just this year we didn't get a chance to, so people gave money, and we had five or six ladies that, their spiritual gift is shopping.
Yeah.
They went out and they did every bit of it and they're done.
So, well, I hope that the people that took a tree off of it, that they knew ahead of time that they weren't going to do it. So they'll let the committee know. Because there was, I do remember.
It's happened in the past.
Yeah, we didn't even know. Yeah, they took the.
If they filled out that paperwork, you're able to check it and see, who didn't.
Yeah.
But I think this year.
They were there at Thanksgiving night or something.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was money given to be able to cover. I'm thankful. It's everything worked out well.
Yeah. It really is interesting. It was a joke that you said, I guess, at church that, that's their some people's spiritual gift to shopping, or it can be taken as a joke, maybe that way. But it really is. I mean, Heather's a good example of that. Heather has always been a great gift idea person, right? And I'm lousy at it.
And I think there is it may not be shopping, but there is an ability to be able to look and figure out who. It's not necessarily discernment, because discernment also has to do with discerning the scriptures and everything else, but there is a little bit of discernment, and there is a little bit of, I think that does come from, maybe it's even hospitality to some degree, that, I see what their need is, and I'm going to go out of my way to get it. And they want to, they find joy in finding that perfect gift.
And there is an art form to that that you may not appreciate if you have the gift. If you don't have the gift, you definitely know it's an art form.
That's
because I can rattle my brain for a month and not come up with an idea.
Yep.
And somebody like that and take 5 minutes and be like, I should do this. And, the kids being young and even to now, she texts me a list of, hey, here's some ideas that you might not have thought of for them. And that is so helpful for me.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, if she, if it's easier for her to go pick them up and send me a PayPal request, we'll do that too. It's that kind of takes me back to 1 Corinthians 12, talking about the spiritual gifts and how, God uses those little things, and they're, 2 + 2 = 5 kind of things, right? You make a much easier process for everybody when everybody does their part.
But Nicole does have it. Nicole has that gift. She sends me stuff all the time. You really ought to get this for Mom. And I'm like, wow, look at that.
Great idea.
I'm glad she's got, I've got her for that.
Yeah.
Well, I do have a question for you today.
Mm.
We taught children's church, and Renee asked me a question, and I just can't remember the answer to it, where Pharaoh hardened his heart the first two times, but God hardened his heart thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me, and I can't. What's your answer on that? Because I know there's an answer. I just can't think. I could not think of what it was.
My answer is, it happened.
What? Yeah, but I mean,
what's your question?
True.
Wasn't it more like Pharaoh had hardened his heart to a point where it wouldn't have mattered?
Yeah, I think there. Well, one, I, it always goes back to that argument of free will. I don't know that you want to use that to bring that up to when you're talking salvation. But to me personally, I mean, when I read it, it does. Pharaoh hardened his heart the first few times. God said, all right.
Then he was blind.
I gave you I've always thought, okay, God gave him a chance, but he chose not to. But at the same time, I believe God knew he wasn't going to, because he told Moses, oh, yeah, I'm going to work some wonders through you.
And I was trying to bring it into a point where, you know, we hear the gospel so much.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, you can reject it to the point of...
And not really. You deceive your own self.
Deceive your own self, and I believe it becomes a time when that heart becomes so hardened that ain't no seed penetrating it.
Yeah, and I look at the political arena now, and some of the stuff they talk about, and I'm thinking, you really believe that? You got to be kidding me. And it looks like, you know...
You're talking about some of the things that go opposite of common sense.
Yes, yeah. They've lost their common sense.
Like there's 27
But they believe that they're right.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't, I guess you can't tell someone they're deceived when they've already deceived themselves.
Yeah, and it's hard to see the truth sometimes. I mean, especially spiritual truth. I mean, now, common sense truth, but spiritual truth, that requires the Holy Spirit anyway. Yes. So, I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, no one comes to the Father unless he's drawn by the Spirit. I mean, it's a spiritual thing.
But I see a lot of people on these news talk shows, and I really don't care to watch them much anymore. But the things that they're talking about, anybody with common sense, man, that's wrong.
Yeah. No, you would.
But they had believed the lie, and they've hardened their hearts enough that they believe their own lie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think... Would that kind of work with Pharaoh? That's really kind of...
Yeah, I think there is. I think he hardened his heart to the point that, you know, God had said, that's it. And I think that happens sometimes.
I mean, you see it on TV all the time.
Yeah. And I think you see it if you witness, and you see it, you know, unfortunately sometimes when you see people reject Christ. I have oftentimes thought, okay, they have originally stopped, you know, put a kibosh to it. And I think that's where quenching the Holy Spirit kind of goes along with that. It's more than just a one-time thing.
It's a lifetime. And then the other question I had, but some people don't come to know the Lord until they're much later in life.
Okay.
Now, does God allow them, because he knew, let's say somebody dies at 70, not saved. Somebody lives to 90 and gets saved at 90.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, did God allow him to live because he knew he would get saved? Well, what about that 70?
Yeah. Well,
did God
that's a tough question.
Did God say, you're not going to get saved anyway, you might as well... You know.
No, I'm going to leave that one too. That's the sovereignty of God.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's an answer necessarily for that. You know, it is one of trying to understand the mystery of salvation. Mm-hmm. Being who, when you're saved, how you saved, who knew about it, when did he know about it, did you have a say in it?
See one part of the picture.
Yeah, that's it. And at the same time, you know, when you begin to talk about, the days of our lives are ordained in his book. Mm-hmm. And so for that person that you use the illustration, 70 would have been, that's the number of days in his book. I don't know, you know, was he taken out because of this, that, and the other. Again, that goes back to God and what his sovereignty.
But I guess what I'm kind of getting at, maybe if he got to 75, he would have repented. Do you think God would? I believe he would have.
Well,
if that type of stuff happens.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of hard to, I don't know that we have any way of proving that or knowing that.
You know, maybe something clicked between 70 and 75, some type of, but I think God, the Bible verse I always go to is in Peter, where God's not willing for anybody to perish.
Sure.
He'll let you live as long as
you can. But there's still some that do.
Yes. Well, there's a lot. A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
And so it's one of those, I'm sure he would love everyone to, but there is that free will part that says, I don't know that I can trust this, or I'm not going to.
And I don't know how it works, but if he's going to be at 70, let's say he has cancer or whatever, I don't know, and this is very hypothetical.
It is very hypothetical, I was going
to
say.
Yeah. He will be sensitive to death. The doctor said there's nothing that we can do for him. But he lives and gets saved at 75.
Right.
But if he died at 70, he wouldn't have been saved.
Right.
And so, I mean, I know that's probably
But we have no way about proving that or knowing that.
And I think
anything else.
And I think when we get to heaven, we don't care.
No. No.
The trials of this life will just seem to fade away.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
One of the real heartbreaks of this week for me, my mom has a coworker who is going through a just really, really tough situation. Her 30-year-old son is in the hospital with brain damage from an asthma attack and is on a ventilator, and she's wrestling with, you know, do we keep him on the ventilator? Just a really impossibly hard situation. Now, this is a woman of tremendous faith, unbelievable faith, and has told the doctors basically treat him as if there's no brain damage, just do everything as you would for if he didn't have brain damage, and trust the Lord with the rest of it. Unbelievable faith. This woman also lost a 22-year-old daughter a few years back to another just fluke medical anomaly. And I don't know the person. It's one of mom's coworkers, but I mean, it's gotten to me all weekend. Yeah. It's been heartbreaking. And Gabe asked me the other day, so I'd been, you know, telling him to pray for him and, you know, trying to tell the story a little bit. And he gets ready to go to bed the other night, and he comes in here. He says, "Dad, I have a question." And I just shook my head. I knew where he was going. I said, "Oh, man." Mm. He said, "It's a God question." I said, "I know." I said, "Sit down, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you I probably don't have the answer." And because I knew what he was going to say. He said, "You know, why does God let this say? God has the ability to make this go away. Why doesn't he?" And I hate to have a cop-out. I don't want him to think it's a cop-out. No. You know what I mean? But the fact is, yeah, it's one of those things you have to trust to God. The best thing that I could come up with for him was that nothing is more important to God than saving a person.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
salvation,
right. Now, if there is a chance that someone else can see the mom's faith through this, and that makes them kind of pause and kind of give Jesus a second look that they might not have before, and that ends up bringing them to the Lord, to God, that's a big win, right?
It doesn't feel like it to that person.
and I can't even pretend that I'd be okay with it in that situation. You know what I mean? But from his perspective, I mean, I kind of say this jokingly, but it's like, I just kind of have to pretend that he knows more than I do sometimes just be okay with that. And
his plans
times we're not going to have the answer.
Yeah, his plans are never human-wise, his ways are not our ways. And sometimes those losses, you know, he may have something, a whole lot bigger plan for it. But at the same time, it doesn't take away the hurt. It doesn't take away that it stings. And that's where, again, that trust comes in. But, I have gotten to a place in my life, and again, I'm not making light of that situation because that's heartbreaking and it's tragic. But for those that are born again, there's worse things than dying.
Mm-hmm.
I know we don't believe that because in this world, what's the worst thing that can happen? I die.
Yeah.
For those that are born again, that's not necessarily the worst thing that can happen. Mm-hmm. I'm home.
Yeah.
And if you've ever been with families that maybe they're battling cancer, you've seen them throughout the years, whether it's Alzheimer's or dementia or any kind of body dementia or something like that, that you see them go through so much suffering. There comes a time when every family member finally says, "Lord, I wish you'd take him home,
mm-hmm.
take him home." Because I think oftentimes we look at death as, "Oh, this is the worst thing ever."
Yeah.
From God's side, it's a child coming home.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the verse that I've always kind of laughed at, because I read it at funerals all the time, is precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints,
mm-hmm.
Psalm 116. And that is one of those verses that until I was a dad and had kids living all over the country, did I really truly understand that verse, because when them youngins come home, ain't nothing like mm-hmm. it. Well, that's a youngin going home. And again, we may get 90 years on this earth. I hope we all do.
Mm-hmm.
But truth be known, 90 compared to 90,000 and 90 million, it's not the same.
Not much difference in one year.
You got 90 million years. This our life is just but a vapor, a smoke, if you will, as James said, it's just smoke, it's gone. It goes that quick. And so when we talk about eternity, that's what we're going to be living. So that's our home.
And the other side to see on that one, same side, but when someone young dies.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Oh, man, yes. Somebody 5 years old, and you question God. Yeah. But 5 years versus 90 years on this earth compared to eternity, There ain't no difference.
Yeah. But it is. I've had to do funerals for babies and stillborn babies and little ones and teenagers, and man, they break your heart.
I mean, it's,
they
not really it's not really it's a not natural, natural thing.
That's right.
For us.
Well, a parent shouldn't have to outlive a child, right. Number one. Even a 40, 50 year old, mm-hmm. you don't expect it.
Well, and especially in that particular case, you certainly shouldn't have to do it twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I told my mom this the other day, but remember Bobby Allison, the race car driver, mm-hmm. died mm-hmm. a few months back, and he lost two sons mm-hmm. about a year apart, 92, 93. Yeah. And honestly, like, when I found out that he passed, my immediate thought was, finally.
He's home.
Yeah. Finally. He's he has United. Been looking forward to seeing those two kids for all this time, and he finally is back. Yep. You know what I mean? Because I've always felt horrible for anybody who loses a child.
Yep.
Anybody who's lost twice, I think that's, I can't even possibly imagine how that's.
And he had a bad wreck too.
He almost got killed right before that. Okay. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, he wasn't right afterwards.
And you know, the thing about it is, his older of the two sons, Davey, was one that was more famous. He had a really rough last year of his life. If you remember 92, 93, he had a lot of really big drops and a lot of really big wrecks, yep. basically, in that last year. And the last year, he won a bunch of races, had a bunch of bad wrecks. His brother died. His grandpa died right before he. I mean, it was just one thing after another for them. And at the same time, he was also an unbelievable testament to faith through all of that, and the way he held up under that. And who knows, the trials that he was going through and the way he handled it, all of that, you know, they were a family of deep faith. That's probably went a long way to helping his mom and dad get through the next little bit. I mean, it's just, you don't ever know. And I'm not, I don't mean to pretend to be able to make an explanation for it, mm-hmm. other than to say, that's my best attempt to try to put it together. But God knows exactly what he's doing with all
that's
of
that. That's right. That's right. And again, if we didn't have the hope, then it would absolutely be the most tragic thing in the world.
Yeah.
But thank goodness there is a hope and there is salvation. So therefore, when people die, even young ones, mm-hmm. okay, there's still that promise of eternal life. And honestly, I hate to say it, that really is what gets you through something like that. Yeah. Having been through something like that, if I didn't know that there was eternal life and that Christ had purchased it for her and she had accepted it, that would be heartbreaking, even more so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking, I do not like to go to funerals when I don't know where they stood.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
That's very sad.
You ought to preach them.
Well, I know you do. Yeah.
The worst.
But coming to somebody's like Miss Fish.
Oh, somebody that's
just coming to church.
Somebody that you do know the Lord. It's going to be a celebration, man. Yeah.
Now, I know the family's hurting. And I get that. Yeah. I sympathize with that. But you
totally
have that deep assurance that, okay, I'm going to see them again.
Yeah, there's hope.
But that, and I have been, I remember going to one 2 weeks before he passed away. He told me he didn't want anything to do with God. He was made to go to church, and he didn't want anything to do with it. He was, he got into cocaine and alcohol. But I do know, I believe he had the opportunity.
Oh, I think there is.
I think he had plenty of opportunities. I just remember my grandma. Thank God that my grandmother was not around.
I mean, there's some things that we're just, you just got to get comfortable knowing that you're not going to know. And the cool thing about it is that you don't have to trust it to somebody like me or you. You're trusting it to God. You're trusting it to somebody. You're trusting in his goodness, period. You're trusting that he is good, even if the situation's not. And I think it's somewhat, I don't know, not comfort. Comfort is not the right word. But you need to remember, I think, during these hard times that God's not happy about them either, right? I mean, he's not happy to see our pain. He might be celebrating the homecoming of the child, yes, right. But he is not. That doesn't make him blinded to the pain that we feel through those things.
That's right.
And
well, he comforts us.
He does.
That's 2 Corinthians.
Yeah.
And it tells us that God is the God of hope and all mercies, or the God of all comfort and the Father of all mercies.
Yeah.
And he comforts us and gives those mercies during those times too.
Yeah.
And again, God can use those tragic accidents and those tragic things to bring people to himself, to help us to grow. And at the same time, sometimes those things turn us a little bit more sour. You know, that's the whole, I think one of the things is that I like to pray is, Lord, during this time, don't let us turn sour. Don't let us turn against you. Help me to always trust. And that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about the sovereignty of God.
Right.
Can you trust? And you can.
Well, it's like one of the best ways I've heard it, maybe the best prayer that I've heard in a situation like this is I've heard you say this, and I used it this week actually in the situation, is please don't waste this hurt. Do something big with this.
If you got a hurt.
Yeah, and I thought that was...
Make something of it. Yeah. Do something for your neighbor.
And I do explain to Gabe during this, it's like, you know, it's through the challenging times that we grow and develop as Christians, and it's through difficult times sometimes. Some of the things that God's going to use for his kingdom is not going to be comfortable at the individual level, at the macro level, whatever. But
right. But
there is the analogy to that of, hey, you know, at football practice, not everything we did was fun. At basketball practice, not everything's fun.
Shape.
You know, and I try to just remember in those hard times to thank him for whatever he's doing with it, because I don't like it. You know, like I'm not going to pretend that I like
it.
Right. But I've got some more uplifting topics probably we can talk about. I hate to spend the entire time on this stuff, but I was reading Luke a little bit. So
okay.
I'm kind of taking a little pause from my other reading for the season, I think, and it's been a while since I've really gotten into the Gospels other than we've been doing a little bit of work in John in Sunday school. But
right.
I've gone through and I'm through the first couple chapters of Luke, and it's funny because as we are now in our second year of doing this, I can look back to maybe last year at some conversations that we had around Christmas time and kind of reference those. And I remember bringing this up last year, and we talked about it a little bit, but then I was reading it again this year, and just kind of something else kind of stuck out that I thought was kind of funny. About Zechariah,
okay.
Is that right?
Yeah, my man.
Yeah.
Zechariah.
So last year I brought him his role in all of this up. So he's the angel comes to him and tells him you're going to have a child, and he says, how can this be? And
okay.
And send a sign, right?
Yeah,
and I didn't catch this last year, but... He got his sign.
Yeah, that's right.
His being muted for
you gonna say a word for what, 9 months, six months, 8 months, however long it was.
But yeah, I didn't catch that. It was in the notes, I think. He asked for a sign and he got his sign.
So oh yes.
Be careful testing the Lord and asking for a sign.
And then on top of that, you know, and I think we may have even mentioned this last year. If you look, Mary and Zacharias, they basically say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. They do. That's what I brought up last year, is that why did Mary get, you know, why would, and it's just different enough that you can see
it. And I think it
he
goes
asked
to the
for
very
a sign.
Part of it. That's right.
He said, prove it. And Mary just said, how? How's that going to happen?
How? And okay, can, let
you know,
it be.
Yeah, let it be.
And I think therein lies the whole gist of it.
Yeah.
He still kind of, come on now.
Yeah.
Where she said, whatever you want to do, Lord, I'm with it.
Yeah. And there was something else that I was reading through this morning. I highlighted it without really knowing why I was highlighting it, I guess. So I guess I'll bring it up. But there's a couple of parts in Luke 2 where it talks about everybody else around Mary rejoicing and her kind of keeping those things in her heart, but celebrating them in her heart. I'm trying to find the verse here really quick.
2:19 and 2:20.
Yeah, 19 and 20. Mary treasured all these things, pondering them in her heart. The shepherds went back, glorifying and praising God of what they had seen and heard. But there was another one, I think, before that where she talked about, it talked about her keeping it in her heart.
Well, I think if you go to the end of Luke chapter 2, when they go to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Ananias and Simeon do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
For Simeon, he is an old, well, and the Bible never says he's old, but we kind of tend to think he is. God made him a promise he would not see death before he sees the Messiah. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Ananias, who was very, very old, and she is called old, prophetess, and every day she's at the temple and she's rejoicing. And I think it kind of blew Mary away a little bit in fact of what was being said. I mean, when it says a sword shall pierce his sword side, and it's going to pierce your heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're going to be heartbroken over this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, I don't know that, again, okay, I'm sorry, that's going to be so bad. You know, you don't know exactly what Mary knew. Mary, mm-hmm. did you know? Okay.
All
right. You don't know, but there's a part of me that down deep, I think that she had some kind of inkling of what this Messiah came to do. that it wasn't necessarily to overthrow Rome as much as it might have been, especially when she hears Simeon's, that, whoa, that probably stopped her in her tracks.
Well, yeah. I imagine Jesus himself told her son.
Well, not when he was a baby.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. But I mean, over 30 years.
But now, if you look at what Gabriel told her, you can kind of see some of that, as far as saving them from their sins and some of those things. Well, did she know that was, you know, what it was? And, you know, the angel told Joseph the same thing.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what she knew, but I would just thinking she probably had more insight on some things than most people did.
Yeah.
Maybe not the disciples. I don't know, but, yeah.
Well,
it's just a guess.
I mean, Mama always knows a little bit more, probably.
Well, and then when you go, well, you can bring in John chapter 2. I mean, there's not everywhere that you're going to be able to prove that, but John chapter 2 might have a little bit of inkling in that, in the fact of the way Jesus responds to her at the wedding, and he says, "Woman, my hour has not yet come." And then, but then she says, "Whatever he says, do." And she got the point. Hey, he's under a different authority, and he's got an hour that he's appointed to. I don't know that she understood what the hour was. Right. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if she knew it was that quick.
It's going to be 3 years.
Yeah, it was only going to be 3 years. Yeah. She thought maybe she thought maybe he might live till after she passed away or something like that.
True.
So that's really what I was getting
at. Well, and I wonder if she took Anna Simeon's words that she's going to see it.
Could have. Because Jesus wouldn't know about that story. That was probably told from Mary. It's just my guess. Mary told that story
to Luke.
To Luke or Peter or whoever.
Well, I mean, that's Luke 1 when he says, "Theophilus, I'm writing this. I've sat down with numerous witnesses." Yeah. I believe that's why you have so much of all the different angel stories. John doesn't have that.
Right.
Mark, he just goes right straight to John the Baptist. Matthew, he's caught up on genealogy, but Luke kind of gets the human side of, hey, there was this old priest in a town with Elizabeth, and they couldn't have a baby, but lo and behold, an angel appeared to them, and that's going to be the forerunner.
Well, I don't know if she understood it before Jesus was crucified, but she understood it when she was interviewed by Luke. Now I know what they were talking about when he was a baby.
But she still had to be a little suspicious if she was a virgin and gave birth. Yeah. That tells you this child's going to be a little something or other.
I really think she knew, but I don't know if she really...
How it's going to play out.
Debatable. How it was going to play out. Was she going to be alive or was she going to be closer to death?
I don't know that she foresaw a crucifixion and a resurrection 3 days
because
later. She could have been.
Because if she was 20 years old, she's only 50. When you pass
give or take.
Yeah.
If she's that old.
Yeah, right. If she's that old. So she's got a lot of life.
Yeah.
I mean, look at you. Don't you think you got a lot of life left?
I hope so.
Yeah.
That's the hope.
But she's not around your age.
And we don't know how old she was when she passed. Yeah. You know, but we kind of lose track of her. In fact, she's not mentioned after.
The Catholics didn't.
That's great. I like that. Yes.
One of the things.
Like she went to Rome or something.
Yeah, well,
she,
I mean.
And met Peter, or?
I didn't go get started.
Oh, boy.
Don't even get started. Like I said, that statue was over there. I was like, what in the world?
Isn't that amazing? I don't want to change the subject, but we have the history of the church on the Roman side or west side, but there's a history on the east side. It's completely different. It's just,
Eastern Orthodox.
I would say completely different, but they have other things.
Right.
So I guess they added to them. I don't know. Church fathers. Some of that stuff was, I would think, a lot of it would be true because it was so close. Mm-hmm. But you can see as the church fathers were writing, just a little, it was kind of skewing a little bit. Some of the, doctrine was a little bit, just one or two things, and it gets more and more. But I don't know.
One of the things that seems to be popping up this year, and maybe it's just I'm noticing for the first time, but you said this on Sunday. I saw it on a thing on Facebook the other day that Jesus came on a rescue mission.
Yeah,
he came on a mission, but it was a rescue mission.
Salvation,
rescuing from sin, and I loved from the sermon Sunday, in bullet point 2, remedy for sin, you reference sin as a mindset, and it's a mindset that puts something else on the throne of our heart.
The place of God.
And I'd about go so far as to say that in most cases, it's putting ourselves sort of in the throne of our hearts in some way or other.
Better than he
right,
does.
Saying I know better than
and
he does.
God, I know what you're telling me, but I think this right here, I'm going to enjoy this more than I would enjoy knowing you and walking with you.
And I would take it just a tiny step further from than that and say, yes, he came to save us from sin, but and you touched on this. There's the eternal consequence of sin, and there's the temporal consequence of sin.
Yeah.
That was point one. Okay, the consequence, and you said sin destroys peace. And yes, eternally, he came to save us from our sins. We get that part. That part gets talked about a lot in church, and a lot, and that's some could say the point. But the other side of it that I think we talk a lot about, maybe a little bit more, is that temporal side of sin, that other 167 side of sin, that's that the way it manifests in your life. Because what
practical.
Because what he's saving you from is that mindset of putting yourself in the throne of your heart. In my common sense brain, when I'm actually thinking the way I should be thinking, I know I don't need to be on the throne of my life. I'm very well aware of what I'm capable of, and I know better than to put me.
I know how I can mess up.
Yeah, and I certainly know what he's capable enough of enough to know that he should be the one calling the shots. And I should be doing what he says. But day to day, hour to hour, it's real easy to forget that part of it. But when you do remember it, that's where you do get that peace of understanding that I don't have to have the answers right now to this situation. I don't have to know why he's doing this. And I don't even have to like it, but I do know that he's going to comfort me through it. And I know that he's still in control of the situation and that I'm still trusting him.
Right.
That trusting God is really where peace comes from.
That's the other 167.
It
honestly.
Is. Yeah.
Trusting God takes the fear out of life.
Takes fear out of every situation.
Yep. That's a good enough line. I might let you put that on your shirt instead of 90% of my sins.
I like that.
Give me your shirt back up.
I do like that part because that is true. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's how many times does Jesus tell his disciples or tell even God, fear not, fear not, fear not, because it's all about trust.
Well, I say that because a lot of my fear has come from not trying to solve things my way, and it just didn't happen.
Well, let me ask you this. Out of all the things you feared, how many of them were legit? I mean, because I fully believe that a lot of things,
I think
a lot of things we fear, I'm not convinced that they're necessarily legit. Or real.
Or happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's an old acronym, false evidence appearing real. You know, if things seem like they're going to be bad or things are going to be, and we worry ourselves to death or we're fearful for that. In reality, it may not needed to be as worrisome or fearful.
You know, fear does a lot of things. Fear causes you to lie because you're scared what someone's going to happen. You know, a lot of people lie, not because they want to lie, because they're afraid that somebody's going to do something, you know. I know I've caught myself doing that.
Well, that's fear.
Because I didn't want to be discovered.
Pride will make you do that.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. Fear will make you do that tremendously. And again, I think it all goes back to that whole selfishness / we're so concerned with ourselves. And that's where it's putting ourselves on the throne of our life and saying, God, move over. I got this.
You're afraid of the consequences. It's like mother tells you not to put your hand in the cookie jar. Okay, well, you put your hand in the cookie jar and get your... Did you go in the cookie jar and get you a cookie? What's the first thing you're going to say when you're a kid? No, I didn't do that.
Yeah. Knowing good and well, they're going to be able to tell something.
Yeah. She knows good and well that you did. So, because you're afraid you're going to get...
Why you
going
to
make
me lie?
Yeah, you're going to give me a whipping or something. Yeah,
don't whip you twice, stealing and lying.
double. You get a double portion.
That's it.
I can do without that double portion.
But at the very heart of Christmas, it is a rescue mission. The first thing that the angels tell the Savior, the shepherds, fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which shall be for all men. For unto you is born this day a Savior. Savior is someone who comes to save. And so the whole message, the first part is, okay, don't be scared. I got a message for you. Chill out. It's a Savior. And so really it's the first.
Is fear mentioned more in the Bible than love? It's pretty high up there.
It's mentioned a lot. Well, fear not.
Fear is in there. Yeah.
Fear not is used a lot in Luke.
Which translation?
Fear is in there, I'd say enough.
But which translation are they quoting from? That's what I want to know.
No.
Yeah. Is it the King James?
It's got to be King James.
Or,
Well, that has the most fear verses. They only have one word.
Yeah. Speaking of fear and lying to your parents.
I'm not worried. I just fear.
I've tried to take a little fearful approach to my kids last weekend on something, and I want y'all to weigh in on this and tell me if I took this too far out of context. So we just did this in Sunday school. One of the last couple of Sundays, John 14, I think it is, and I think in that chapter, three different times Jesus says, "If you love me, you'll obey my commands."
Sure.
And he repeats himself three times. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten really tired of telling my kids the same things over and over and over again. And the other night, I finally might have overacted a touch, but I kind of thought, I did a great job of teaching my kids about grace. It might be time to double back down and make sure we covered mercy the right way and got into all that. And they were not listening, and that it was one of these things that I kind of intentionally flipped, I think, a little bit to say, okay, it's time to see, like, what you ought to be doing. And the funny thing was, Gabe called his mama saying, I didn't do anything wrong. And I'll admit, in his version of the story, which is probably true, it doesn't seem like he was the one bearing most of the responsibility, but this story has played out so many times, and I've seen it play out so many times, that I know he plays a role in it 9 times out of 10, right? And his punishment wasn't anything crazy. I wasn't making him scrub the floors with a toothbrush. He was doing his laundry. He was cleaning his room. He was doing a whole bunch of things that I should have been making him do anyway, right? But I told him finally at the end of it, I said, you know I'm not Jesus, okay, so I want to tread really lightly when I say this, but you can tell me you love me all day long, you can write me I'm sorry notes, you can do all these things. Reese always, and sweet as it could be, and Reese, if you hear this, I love you, and I'm not telling you not to do this, but she's always writing me apology notes every time she does something wrong, and I think it's very sweet of her to do that. At the same time, in the end of all of this, actions are what show do you love somebody. And I don't mean to, you got to tread carefully telling your kids that, because I know I'm not Jesus and not all of my commands are going to be perfect and right. But I do think there is a little bit of that in your parenting, is that if you do love me, then you need to obey my commands. Don't just do whatever you want to do and then come back to me later and apologize and write me an I'm sorry note and just think that that's okay, because at some point or another, I need to see it in your actions.
Yeah, and it needs to be real.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it. I can't tell you how many times I've said I'm sorry, but I just wanted, I didn't want to get my backside
right.
beat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah. I mean, that was me as a youngin' all the time is, I'm going to say I'm sorry, or I'm going to do whatever I got to do to keep from getting that beating.
Yeah.
And, well, whipping. I never got
beaten.
I had to worry.
Probably deserved to be beaten, but I didn't.
Yeah, I wasn't worried about my mother. No, it was at 5 o'clock.
It's when she would tell pops. That's right.
Yeah. At night, when I heard my first name, I knew what was coming.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Your first, second name, something. It's not gonna. Nice.
That's not a good sign.
I got something I'm working on, and I want to see if y'all can help me here. I'm working on a couple of things. One is the sermon for Sunday, and it's John 10:10. What we're looking at on Sunday mornings is why Christ came. And this Sunday, John 10:10, is he came to give abundant life. Or he came to give life and to give it more abundantly. First part of that verse is the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. So we're going to take a look at the options there, that there is a war going on. You know, it's legit. There's an enemy that wants to steal, kill, and destroy. Mm-hmm. But there's a good shepherd. And I don't know that I'm going to even go this way in the sermon. But one of the things that I've been trying to flesh out is, okay, so ultimately, God wants you to bear fruit, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you bear fruit? You abide. Mm-hmm. All right, so how do you abide? Mm-hmm. You obey. Mm-hmm. How do you obey? Do you believe?
Are you doing acrostic? Because I'm trying to think. Are you?
I don't know. I don't know that I'm going to flesh it out to an acrostic. I'm just going through if the end goal is that we bear fruit, mm-hmm. and he's told us that numerous times, then we bear fruit by abiding, mm-hmm. and then we abide by obeying, mm-hmm. and obeying comes from, I want to say, believing.
Believing, and I would say also
loving.
Loving, that's what.
All right. So then we obey because we love. So where does belief fit in there? Is it F-A-O-L-B, or is it F-A-O-B-L?
I'm wondering where does...
I'm just trying to... That's too many letters. I'm trying to...
The word that I would insert...
You're going to have to really spell that one out for me.
Well, I've got it written out here. You got fruit, abide, then abide is from obedience. Uh-huh. Now, I agree. I think love comes from obedience. But where does love come from? Is that belief?
Yeah, I would say.
Because I think that's a word that has to be in there somewhere.
You got to believe in somebody. I have to believe in somebody to love somebody.
You think?
I do. Yeah, I think so.
I'm just thinking of when Jesus said, believe in God.
That's what I was trying to mean.
Believe, and how that leads to something. I think we're right. Is believe goes to love goes to obedience. Obedience goes to abiding.
I mean, you don't love
And then
verses.
Abiding goes to...
It took me a while to love the Lord.
The word I would just ask, where does this fit into it, is trust. Because trust. I think part of belief, there is belief in the, do I believe it's real? And there's also the belief in it, do I believe...
Willing to step out.
That I'm, yeah, willing to step out in that trust, because it's that stepping out that shows your trust. I think it's mentioned several times, even the demons believe.
Right.
So belief by itself is one thing.
But they don't trust me.
But they don't trust. I mean, he's just saying you believe in God, good for you.
Yeah.
But it's going to result in obedience. That's the context.
Love. I mean, I'm just thinking when I just got saved, I didn't know to trust. I didn't know to love.
Right.
That came over time.
I don't know which comes first in it, because I mean, I've had to trust God in situations for me to see, for Him to show me or demonstrate that, hey, look, I don't care what it looks like to you, it's going to be okay. I got this, right? Yeah. You have to trust to do that, but somewhere through that process of trusting God, you get to a point where you just say, you know what, even if I don't like the situation, even if it seems impossible, right now, Lord, it seems impossible for me to love this person, but you said I could. Mm-hmm. And not only did you say I could, but you actually commanded it. So I know I can love this person. So I have to trust you to love this person the way you tell me to love this person, and to trust that you're going to trust that that's whether I like the situation, whether I like where it takes me, whether I like what you do with it. I just have to trust.
But it took you a while to get there. Is that right?
I ain't there yet.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just saying.
I'm working on it.
Trusting is also, to me, trusting is growing too, part of the growth. I didn't trust God for everything when I first got saved. You asked me.
And we still struggle.
Yeah. Yeah, and I still struggle. I don't struggle with the love, I don't think. But maybe I don't. I'm not saying I love God enough.
I mean, but at times we all do, because He says, if you're not obeying me, how do you don't love me? So love and obey have to be close together.
Yes. Loving is obeying. Yeah. I mean, to obey Him is to love. That is His ultimate.
So I'm going to think about it some more. Y'all think about it too.
Yeah.
But the abundant life.
This weekend?
Huh?
I mean, are you preaching it Sunday?
Preaching it Sunday. I still got 3 days, man. But more importantly, I'm just focusing on, my whole thing is, what does the abundant life look like?
You preaching on Friday?
So 3 days, I got to have my outline.
Oh,
I got to have my outline by tomorrow night.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But really, I'm going to be talking about what is the abundant life. We throw it around. I don't know that we actually know it. And I don't know that we've actually seen it, except on a couple of occasions.
I don't think the abundant life is what's being preached today.
I don't think it has anything to do with prosperity. That's what goes in my pocket. I'm not saying God won't bless you.
No, I'm not either.
But I think the abundant life, I mean, it's not about a, it's about a quality of life. And that quality of life is having peace, having joy. I've got several things that I think it kind of fills in, because I just don't know that we know exactly what abundant life is.
Abundant life to me is, I don't have to worry about anything. No. I know what's going to happen.
That's part of it.
It's not materialistic, because all that's going to pass away. My abundant life is laying treasure up into heaven. Abundant life to me would be, what brings me joy is helping other people, seeing the smile on their face.
Well, Luke 12:15 says, your life is not consist of just material things. That's in the parable of the man with the barn.
And I don't know the abundant, because I don't know if it's in the, I know it's in the King James, but I don't know if it's in the other translations. But I don't know if that's the very best word from the Greek into the English. I don't know if abundant would be the best.
Well, I mean, it's abundant, it's overflowing.
Peaceful life or something.
No, it's not. It has to do with quantity there.
Okay.
of it's an overflowing. It is a great amount. It is a
what's the word?
P E R I S O N. If you want to look it up in the Greek,
P R I S O N, prison.
It's prison. Is
prison
is what it is. Okay. But and it's not life. There's two words for life that that can be used in the Bible, and this isn't the normal word for life. This is Zoe, which usually in the past he might use the word that we get bio, which is we get biology from. We get zoology from the word that's used here. So it's a different kind of life. It's a spiritual life is what it is. I mean, the abundant life is a spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. The thing that I'm going to really submit to everyone to consider is this abundant life isn't a rare thing.
No. Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be the average.
We just misinterpret that.
And I think that's where, again, I want to be above average, because the average Christian is, let's be normal. I don't want to be average, because the average Christian in America doesn't know what they don't even know what the abundant life is, much less walk in it. I want to be above that. I want to be the normal Christian, which that is normal.
Well, the abundant life to me would be something like, I have no worries. Everything's going to work out.
Well, there's so much that goes into it.
Yes. Doing things for others. That just makes me just very happy.
Well, there's a ton that goes into the abundant life. But my main thing is going to be, how do you get it? Because it only comes from Christ. And then number two is, how do I make sure I'm walking in it? Because, we might be able to define it, but what are you doing to make sure that you are walking in it each and every day? Well, so there's a lot to unpack in that verse.
I don't know where this fits into the sequence of these, but the other word that I'm thinking of, it ties it all together somehow, is relationship. Mm-hmm. Because there's a difference between knowing of God and having a relationship. Yeah. And to me, that relationship's where the abundant life comes from. That relationship is what empowers me to trust Him. That relationship is what empowers me to love others. That relationship is what empowers me to obey His commands. And something I was thinking about sometime this week, Sunday at the parade, when we were walking down the streets there, Gabe asked me at some point how long I had known you, or maybe he said, how did you meet Ben?
Right.
And I said, I went to his church one time. I think in Gabe's mind, like, me and you were old college buddies, and you went into the missionary, or went into the ministry, and I said, we went to his, went to his church, and sure. got to know him, and talked to him a little bit. But, tying that into where I was going with the relationship thing, I mean, I knew you in 2012. Right. I met you in 2011. Sure. I got to know you in 2013. Mm-hmm. We had some conversations 2015, 2016. I would say we had a relationship. We weren't best friends or buddies, I could call you and we could talk. And, over the last year plus, whatever, of doing this show, I've gotten to know you much better than I did for all those years. We text each other during state games, Carolina games.
Yeah, there's a deeper knowledge.
It's a different thing. So, to me, that's kind of a metaphor, so to speak, of the relationship. How do we do that? Well, it wasn't from me listening to you talk once a week.
Exactly.
Or even me watching a bunch of videos of you on YouTube. It's from just spending time together. And to me, that's where the abundance of life comes from, is when I feel that presence with the Lord, that he's, I don't want to be too cavalier with this word, but to call him my buddy, it's not quite that he's my buddy, but it's just that walking, living relationship of constant, hey, sometimes it's gentle correction, and sometimes it's not so gentle correction.
Right, and it is a friend.
It is definitely
a friend. Questions from this past Sunday. I know that's one of my favorite segments.
what did you preach on?
We preached on one of my favorite verses of all time, 1 Timothy 1:15.
We were taking care of you.
This is a trustworthy statement, worthy of all acceptance. Worthy of full acceptance, Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners, of which I am foremost.
And do you know?
Of which I am chief.
I thought that you were really short Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, well, I was so busy with the children's.
Yeah.
I said, man.
It was
a 45 minute sermon.
Yeah, it was. We were
a bit. Really? Renee told me it's 45 minutes.
I think you said this. I can't tell if this is my notes or yours, but sin puts what's important to you in place of God.
Yeah.
And I think salvation puts Jesus in our place in God's eyes. It kind of replaces what God would see of us
right.
with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of put as my little sarcastic note, think of those in like point one was sin puts what's important to you in front of God, and salvation is number two, puts Jesus in front of you. So then my notes at the bottom here said, number one is stupid of us, and we don't deserve number two, especially given number one.
And I think that's the essence of sin mm-hmm. is I'm replacing Christ on the throne of my life with something else, or mm-hmm. I'm replacing God, mm-hmm. or I'm substituting something for God. Mm-hmm. And the essence of salvation is Christ is substituting himself for us. Mm-hmm. And I just had a big time with that this past week when I was mm-hmm. thinking about that, looking at that it's just unreal.
Also, like you pointed out, growing with Christ reveals how unlike Christ we are. We've talked about that a lot on the show, and mm-hmm. that, you know, it's you can't, again, but you have to get to know That's Christ it. To That's know it. How different
and,
you
and
are.
You grow, and, yeah. and we thank God for it, but then we realize just how far we are, because it wasn't that, you know, Paul was just being, you know, kind of, oh, yeah, you know how we talk. We put ourselves down, but in a way that's kind of bragging. We're bragging when we do that. It's kind of a fake brag or a fake put down. No, but I think Paul's being legitimate.
I do too.
In that. He's saying, no, I'm so far away. You know, and the you know, as I joked and I said, was he regressing? He goes from being the least of the apostles, which, hey, if I'm one of the 12, at least I'm in the playoffs,
yeah.
to the least of the saints. Well, all the saints, that's a whole bunch of people, but I'm the last of them, to now I'm the number one of the worst.
Yeah.
When it comes to, as I said Sunday, when it comes to sinners, I'm Oregon.
Yeah.
You know?
Even as we grow with Christ, part of the reason that the more we grow, the further he seems to slip away, or the further away from us he seems to be, is as you get to know him, you realize how great he really
That's
is.
Right.
It's not that we're regressing. It's
we're seeing how much bigger he gets. We're seeing more detail than just the highlights.
Yeah. Right.
And we're just seeing him.
When I read Paul about talking about how bad he was, I thought he was like, you know, kind of bragging, but not.
False humility.
Humility. But now it's like,
there was nothing false in humility.
He was really serious.
It's just straight up humble.
Yeah, because he's getting all these revelations and everything. He can't even keep them. That's the funny part. He's getting these stuff, but he don't even know what to do with them himself.
But what's the root word of revelation? It's God revealing, right? Mm-hmm. So when God reveals more of himself to us, guess what that does for us? It helps us realize more of his greatness. Which, yeah, by that, what can you divide anything by infinity, right? Well, when that numerator or that denominator gets bigger, all of a sudden you seem smaller. Even if you aren't small, you can double in size. You're doubling your growth.
Got a long way.
But you've seen more of him now.
And yeah, well, some of us think, and I remember my father used to say this, the man upstairs. Mm-hmm. It's a lot bigger than that. Most of us think, you know, Christ loved you this much.
I hope so.
It's a lot bigger than that.
Yeah.
His love for us, you know, west and right. I mean,
west and right.
North and south.
That keeps going and going, and it never stops.
Sure.
And as far as we know, our universe keeps on going.
Well, I've even heard east and west. There was a specific reason he used east and west, not there north and south. You travel north long enough, eventually you'll be going south.
You travel east,
you're going to be east forever.
I've tried to work that equation out by turning this way.
You love that, yeah.
It's amazing how that is just, to me, and that just shows you, I mean, you can point it to that, well, the Lord knew the earth was round anyway. We know a lot more than they did back then.
Yeah.
But we still don't know near as much as we think we know.
The problem is the more we know, the more we try to...
The more we try
to math away God. Uh-huh. And the funny thing to me about it is the more we fail to do that, the more, from my perspective, the more we prove God.
That's right.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
It's like the book of Job. The Lord hangeth the earth on nothing. What does that mean? Until we went out of space, that scripture was kind of like a mystery. But it's this ball just going around around the sun.
Singing out there.
The Bible's not a scientific book, but when it does speak about nature, it'd be very wise to listen to it because it seems to be 100% right.
I read something, or I saw a video the other day of like 10 mystery or 10 things about the solar system you didn't know. So we're not going way out in distant galaxies. We're just talking about solar system. And it was pretty cool, little tidbits of stuff. And basically the narrator of the video, it's not a Christian video, it's just someone saying, you know, we see this and we don't know how to make sense of it.
Right.
We see this and we don't know how to make sense of it. Things like, why does Venus spin in the opposite direction of its axis when all the rest go in the same direction? Little things like that. And I'm just thinking that, okay, if I want to take the science approach to this, well, then let's try to figure out all these theories. And they're all talking about just theories.
Yeah,
you know, we think that it could have been this, 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 and this, and this, and we don't. And I'm thinking from a Christian perspective, it basically is because God wanted to.
And God can.
And maybe it was just one of these things where he said, let's make this ball spin the other way. That ought to be cool. That'll show them a trick of mine. That look what I can do with
always
this.
Baffling them. Keep them guessing.
Yeah. And instead of looking at it that way, we try to figure out some way to say, well, this proves there wasn't an intelligent creator, because an intelligent creator would have made it all the same. No, an intelligent creator can figure out how to make this one spin against the laws of physics.
one that will always leave you with awe.
That's right. Yeah. And that's where that ego of mankind, we trying to put ourselves in that dominant throne, all we end up doing is baffling ourselves and confusing ourselves. And also, when we just sit back and say, maybe there's just something out there that's way more powerful than us, that knows more than we do, and we should just sit back and enjoy the ride, that's peace and abundant life to me, is just being able to sit back and enjoy that it's his world. I'm just living in it.
Yep, and I think there's so much that goes into this abundant life, and that's where I've got to try to explain it. But what I want to really have happen is people doesn't just understand it, they want it.
How do you explain abundant life in 45 minutes or less, preacher?
I think you can without going into too much detail. I mean, we've named at least five or six things it is, but my main thing is hoping people can see it. And number two is that they can believe it's possible. Because I think in today's society, we almost, come on, we live in a real world where there's too much junk and I can't have the abundant life. Who said?
Yeah.
Christ said he came to give it to you.
It's so much simpler than people think it is, and that's something that's been a theme of the show a lot, is that it's not
complicated.
It's not big booming voices from the heavens, and it's not all these crazy things that people try to make it out to be. It is literally just paying attention and reading the Word. I mean, you got to read the Word to get to know God, so you know what
abiding. It's
right.
Again, going back to that, it's abiding, it's obeying, it's, you know, that has to take place.
But it all kind of starts with, I don't know if it starts with this, but you have to trust it, to submit to it, to believe it. Otherwise, it's just a cool book. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be willing to admit to yourself that something more powerful than you can be out there. I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. Is
everybody wants you to think they know.
We want control.
Yeah. I see a lot of professors. They really don't know what they're talking about, but they want you to think they know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They preach evolution as a fact. It's not no fact, but they want you to think it's a fact.
Yeah.
That they know what they're talking about. And I think a lot of that stuff comes from being prideful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Being, want the spotlight on me.
Well, I'm looking forward to Sunday. That sounds like
a whole lot of work to do. I am behind on it, and it is one of, there's so many ways for me to go on it. I mean, I kind of really think I need to focus on the first part, too, that there is an enemy, there's a thief that has come to steal, kill, and destroy. Well, what is he trying to steal, kill, and destroy? Well, technically, I assume since Jesus came to give life, he's trying to steal, kill, and destroy life. And he sure wants to steal, kill, and destroy the abundant life, if anybody has it. So these things we just talked about, of joy, of peace, no worry, no fear. Sounds like me, that's exactly what he wants to create. So I've got to do that. I think one of the things I looked at this morning that really made me realize that, man, verse 10 really is about a war. It's a battle.
Yeah.
The war is raging when you read verse 10. There's a thief who comes to steal, kill, and destroy, and there's one that has come to give life and to give it more abundantly. To me, there's a war. That's the spiritual war that we're in. Now, how much of that I want to go into, I don't know. I don't know that I'll go too much into that, but there's an enemy that would love to do it. And so you see spiritual warfare right there. Ephesians 6:18. Then even as you go through and you look at what the enemy wants to do, if he can cause doubt, if he can destroy, I mean, there's so many things he wants to do, deceive. I mean, that's his MO. So he's going to do anything he can to keep you from walking in that.
Well, and if you think about the fruits of the Spirit, I'd say those are things he wants to steal.
You could even say that's the abundant life.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to steal love,
peace, patience, kindness, goodness.
Yeah. Well,
there's nothing like having peace.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Nothing like having security.
Yeah.
And that's number, that's number two and three.
Love, joy, peace, wholeness.
Yeah.
There's nothing like having security. There's nothing like knowing that if I pass away, that I'll be in heaven. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like knowing that you haven't seen who God really is. So we got a glimpse, but there's nothing like when I pass away that I really face to face. And all that stuff I think is a part of the abundant life.
Yeah.
Always looking out for you.
Always.
Thank you for the church, Renee.
Yes,
we appreciate
you very much.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much. I was going to send a shout out to, I don't know if we got it on the first part, but Rachel and those sausage balls she sent. But man,
I don't know if we got the shout out on there or not, but I hadn't seen a sausage ball yet. Where are they at?
they're in here. They're not Rachel's.
Oh,
okay. I didn't think they were.
No, but they made me think of Rachel's, and I owe her. She sent some to the house.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out. Turn it. I'm waiting for you to bring mine.
Yeah, okay.
Bye,
because I like these.
So now, wash them. We need to turn them inside out.
Hell yeah.
I do. I turn them inside out.
So this don't get messed up.
Yeah. Mm. Let me see. That would be the CB, Charles, Ben, Wyman, and Howard. CBHWs. The Carolina Beach Highway something.
What chapter was that?
Luke 1.
Yeah, Luke 1.
Oh, I thought you said Zechariah.
Well, no, Zechariah is the prophet, John the Baptist's daddy.
Yeah, not the book.
Yeah,
it's a humble way of presenting a counterpoint,
rather than
something to consider. Yeah. Not saying you're right or wrong. Just submit for your consideration.
Yes, I love it. It's one of my all-time favorites. Let me see if somebody has a story. Y'all keep talking.
Cut. I submit for your consideration that 90% of Kenny's sins are his fault.
The other 10
are up for debate. Is it washing or drying? I know drying them, because that's where I always get mine in trouble.
I probably won't dry them.
So you won't have to pick out a shirt all Tuesday in December. Isn't that nice? You won't have to worry about your wardrobe on Tuesdays. December.
There you go.
I like it.
What's your magnification? I might have to borrow it.
I could go anything, really.
Carolina Beach Highway Workers. We're going to start singing beach music.
Oh, maybe.